Welcome and thank you very much for joining us on episode 166 of the Blazers Edge podcast. I am your weekend host, Chris Lucia. My man, Brandon Goldner, welcome back to the show, dude.
What? Whoa, we're back on the air. It's been so long. I forgot what it's like to be on a famous podcast with a famous podcaster such as yourself, Chris. If you want to reach out to the Blazers Edge Weekend Podcast, you can always do so at blazersedgepodcast@gmail.com. And please don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, criticize, emotionalize our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play. We would very much appreciate your feedback, good, bad, or indifferent. It helps make the show better. So please let us know what you think.
Joining us this week on the Blazers Edge Weekend Podcast is Nate Duncan from the Dunked On Podcast. Nate, thank you very much for coming on the show, man.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
So one of the awesome things about hosting a podcast and a podcast about the Blazers and the NBA is that oftentimes you get to have guests on where you consume their content and you read their work and you listen to their podcasts. And Nate, I want to say, I think I can speak for Brandon and a number of Blazers Edge listeners as well, that we're big fans of the Dunked On podcast. So I want to give you an opportunity real quick up top to talk about where Blazers Edge listeners can find that.
Yeah, absolutely. My Twitter bio or my Twitter handle is NateDuncanNBA, and just right in my Twitter bio, there is a link to the Dunked On podcast. Basically, it's supposed to just be an all-encompassing NBA podcast that hopefully if you listen to it, you're up to date on the NBA. We try to hit on just about everything we can, cap stuff, scouting, free agency, game wrap-ups, whatever is relevant at the time.
Okay, so on the Dunked On podcast at the end of, I believe it was July 28th episode for those who want to go back and take a listen, you were doing NBA reviews of the Western Conference. You got to the Portland Trailblazers. And is it fair to say that in your review, you were less than impressed by the Blazers offseason?
Yeah, I gave them an F+ in my grade, which is actually the worst of anyone that I gave in the NBA. And I think Danny actually was more disappointed. I think the reason for that wasn't so much that, oh, you know, they got terrible players and that even that I think they're necessarily going to be worse next year. They might actually, in fact, be better because I think they found something with playing Aminu at power forward that they didn't have throughout a lot of the year last year. But it was more just that this was an opportunity that they had, and I felt like they really squandered it and instead locked themselves into a very expensive team that, to me, doesn't really have any sort of realistic, even long shot chance at becoming a championship contender. Well, so let me ask you guys this. Going into the offseason, what did you see as the Blazers' primary needs, just even to get better for this upcoming year?
Well, the first one, I think, on most people's list was rim-protecting center. And I think we were looking at, I mean, obviously, like 29 other teams in the NBA, Hassan Whiteside, and then below that, you're thinking about a guy like Dwight Howard, and then maybe a little further down, you're thinking about a guy like maybe Jan Mihimi or something along those lines. So rim protection, I would say, was probably the biggest priority for most Blazer fans.
Yeah, and I'm in agreement with you as well. I'd say defensive rebounding also that would be another thing that, especially if they're going to play with Aminu at the four. I don't think Plumlee is a great defensive rebounder, so I think that would have helped a lot too. And just in general, I think this team has a great offense. And when you've got two guards with the profiles of CJ McCollum and Dame Lillard, I think if you've got those two guys out there and then anybody who can shoot okay at the three and the four, you're always going to have a very good offense, a top 10 offense, maybe even top five, depending on how those guys play, because they just kind of break the defense. Those are both guys who can pull up for a three pointer off the pick and roll. And so that means that you have to trap them or you have to do a lot of junk defenses that really put your defenders out of position. And so I thought the offense was going to be good as long as you have those two guys. And the way you get better is to improve a defense that has largely under Stotts played very conservatively. They don't really force turnovers. They don't block shots. They don't really make the defense or the offense uncomfortable at all. And so that I agree with you. I felt like that sort of a center would be my number one option. And I realized that they probably made some feelers to Howard. He wasn't interested. Whiteside wasn't interested. But then I probably would have targeted Mahimi, or I would have targeted Bismack Biyombo further down the list, or even someone like a Cole Aldrich. But I think that they instead locked into very long contracts, Evan Turner being the most egregious of those, that didn't address what I at least considered to be a big need, and really hamstrung what they could potentially do in the future, both because they wouldn't have space, but also because I think they're going to have a lot of bad contracts who, you know, weren't necessarily going to be assets and would be difficult to move if you wanted to later trade for that rim protecting center or something else that you need.
Let me ask, a medium amount was made of Myers Leonard's performance in the 2015 playoffs against the Memphis Grizzlies, defending against one of the premier offensive centers in the league, Marc Gasol. And the Blazers obviously have Myers Leonard locked up now, 4 years, $40 million, which both you and Danny, I think, said that that was a relatively reasonable contract. In your view, does a player like Myers Leonard have the physical tools, or in your view, does he have the potential to become a decently defending center? Or in your view, is that just something that may not be in the cards?
Well, he's 24 now. They basically played him a lot of the time at power forward last year where he wasn't really able to do. And then he and Davis kind of switched assignments to my recollection. And Davis was playing more on the perimeter when they would play together on that second unit. I think he has the potential. I don't think that it's a likelihood or even a good probability, because he is not really seen to be, you know, if you could put someone else's brain in there, then maybe it would work. But he just doesn't seem to have the toughness or really the basketball IQ to be a fantastic rim protecting center. I was more impressed, frankly, with what he was able to do on offense in that series at the five. But now they have, I guess you could say, probably four centers on this roster, and I don't think that they really are going to be able to get him much time at the five.
And unfortunately, one of our centers is undergoing quasi-experimental knee surgeries as we speak, which is probably not such a great thing. At least they got him on a good contract. Of course, talking about Festus Ezeli.
Yeah, I thought Ezeli was one of the moves that I did like. And granted, there's a reason that he was available for so cheap. Not even necessarily that he performed very poorly at times in the playoffs, but just more because of the health issues, which I think had to do with him performing poorly in the playoffs. I think if you, the way that he played in the first half of the year for Golden State before he got hurt, he looked like maybe he could have been that option as a starting center. It's more of a health risk for him, which we're already starting to see problems with. So, but to me, I think that part of it was fine. And if you struck out in those rim protecting centers, and maybe you could even say that Mahimi or Biyombo were too expensive, I disagree. I probably still would have gone pretty hard after those guys. Just because they filled the need so much, even if you were going to overpay. But it's more now what they did with the other contracts, especially Turner. And Turner is the one that really sealed it for me. If they had just, you know, let's say instead of signing Turner, they had brought back Gerald Henderson on a similar contract to what he ended up getting in Philly, or maybe just a little bit more, just something to maintain a little bit more flexibility, I would have liked things a lot more. I probably would have given him like a C. And also to remember, too, for Blazers fans who may not have listened to the show, we don't do it like business school. It's a normal distribution around a C. So it's not like, you know, the average for the whole league was a C. It's not like, you know, your classes in college where like the average was a B+. So that mitigates a little bit of how I saw the offseason, but not much. I did think it was one of the worst in the league.
So, getting back to Evan Turner and the fit with Evan Turner, you mentioned, you know, the Blazers, one of their priorities should have been shoring up a little bit of shooting on the wings at the three and a little bit at the four position. Evan Turner, being that big signing that the Blazers get, I think is probably on the other end of the spectrum of what you would consider a quote-unquote good shooting wing. So I don't disagree with you in that being a bad fit, but I think on the podcast with Danny, and let me know if I don't paraphrase this correctly, but it was more or less the characterization of his fit was that Dame and CJ both like to have the ball in their hands, as does Evan Turner. So there's a question as to how well those three or any combination of those three would really mesh well. And I think Blazer fans and myself included are looking at this and maybe thinking this could be a benefit because, or in some ways, because Dame and CJ are both great players off the ball. So if you have a second or a third ball handler out there with either of those guys, it allows them to play off the ball and they can have a little bit of pressure off them. So do you think that take is something that really makes sense with a guy like Evan Turner? I know you cover the whole league and probably watch a fair amount of Celtics games and have definitely seen Evan Turner at work. So what do you think about Evan Turner being more of a facilitator and Dame and CJ playing a little bit off the ball when he's in the game with them?
Well, so what does that mean he's going to be a facilitator? Does that mean he's just going to be dribbling the ball up top while they come off down screens, a floppy type of action? Does that mean that he's actually going to be running pick and roll and you're hoping that he's going to draw a bunch of help and then kick to them? Like, what does that mean exactly that, you know, he's going to be handling the ball without them? Because I think whatever advantage you gain with those two guys being able to move off the ball and get some shots, you lose by how much less effective they are when they actually do have the ball, and then you just don't have to guard Evan Turner.
That's absolutely fair. I mean, there's going to be a crowded backcourt, and Terry Stotts is going to have quite the situation, I think, trying to figure out how to stagger those minutes because, like you mentioned, you know, having all those guys on the court at the same time, like, it's definitely, you can have Dame and CJ play off the ball a little bit, but it is mitigated with Evan Turner out there and his inability to shoot when they have the ball and they're looking for somebody to pass to.
Well, so the other thing I think we're kind of missing the forest for the trees a little bit with Turner, because it's not so much that he isn't a great fit, which he isn't. It's just that he's not that good. That's a terrible contract for him. He's not that good of a player to get 4 years, $70 million. That's the type of contract that you give to someone who is a high-end starter. He just hasn't shown that at all in his career. He had by far the best year of his career last year, and he still wasn't a starting caliber player.
So let me ask, do you find any validity in the, there's an argument, and I tend to think that there is some validity in this, that Portland as a city and as a franchise has difficulty luring those upper tier free agents, and if the team is looking to kind of enrich its asset base, that the only way that the team is going to be able to do it is by overpaying players that perhaps other markets wouldn't have to overpay for. So I guess a two-part question. One, do you find any validity there? And two, if you do, would there be a threshold, a dollar amount for Evan Turner that you think would be an acceptable amount for a franchise like Portland to overpay for him? Or is he just that bad of a player to where he's not really worth throwing a significant amount of money at all, even if it's less than the amount that he ended up getting?
Well, you look at, let's take those in turn. Number one, this whole Portland can't get free agents things. I don't live there. I will do that as a caveat. I've had the good luck that whenever I come there for the Hoop Summit, it just happened to be good weather. I understand it's not that way most of the time, but
yeah, it's beautiful right now. But.
Yeah. How many years, if you really go back and look at the history, I'm going to guess from my recollection, I can't really think of more than one or two, if that, that the Blazers have actually been both good and had cap space. And this is the first year of those that comes to mind. Certainly back when before the Jailblazers, like that 99 team, the 2000 team, even though it wasn't necessarily by a free agency, there are players who definitely wanted to go there. Like Scottie Pippen wanted to be traded to Portland by my recollection. I think they're, and they were good. So I don't think it was that big of an impediment necessarily. So I would push back a little bit on this whole, oh, we're never going to get free agents, because like, can you think of any years where like, hey, there's a decent team and they were in the free agent market and they just couldn't get anybody?
That's a fair point to make, I think.
It's the same thing as the Celtics. Everyone is saying with the Celtics, oh, they finally got a free agent. Well, they hadn't used cap space for like the last 20 years before last year. So it's not really, I don't think, like, there may be, it's almost like, you know, reverse discrimination by Portland's own citizens against them to say like, oh, you know, we just can't get a good player. And just to say, I felt like this year, yeah, you know, you're in a situation where your guys were going to get expensive. They had small cap holds. You wanted to take advantage, but just this was such an overinflated market that I would have rather just not gotten anyone than gotten Turner at that contract. Like, that's how bad I think it's going to turn out. And if you were 25, I might feel differently, but he's 27. So you're really going to get, you know, probably maybe he'll play at last year's level for 1 year, and then he's going to start what hopefully for the Blazers will be a gentle decline, but may not be.
Well, that's something, the age thing, because that's something that you hear a lot, and for good reason. If when players get past a certain age, you know, why is it worth throwing, you know, 4 years, 5 years if they're staying with their own team at them? But something that comes to my mind is that you, unless a player has an injury history, you don't necessarily know how long they're going to be effective. There are players that are effective deep into their 30s, and then there are other players, as Portland knows extremely well, maybe much too well, players who are cut short in their primes by chronic injuries or, you know, a freak accident. So I don't know if the difference between 25 and 27 in my mind isn't as big of a difference, but you know, I to me, Evan Turner, I haven't seen anything from him to say that he's going to be a good fit with this team necessarily. I think the only thing that he has going for him as far as a free agent piece is that the Blazers need a little bit of talent. They got a little bit of talent. They had to overpay for it. I'm more or less okay with that narrative, but I can also see how some folks may not be.
Well, so one of the things that we talked about in the pre-show that you wanted to talk about is, well, what were some of the other alternatives that they had? We talked about one of them, and I would imagine that someone like Biombo or Mahimi would have rather come to Portland for the same contracts that they got in Washington and Orlando, because they probably could have promised them a starting job, which they wouldn't necessarily, they're not necessarily going to have in Washington and Orlando, and to be part of a better team as well. So I think it's pretty realistic to me. I don't know how, there were never any reports that they were even in discussions with those guys. Maybe they just wanted to stay on the East Coast, whatever it was. I could be wrong about that, but it stands to reason to me that they could have gotten them for close to those contracts. And yeah, those might have been overpays by maybe, you know, $2-3 million a year or so, but it fit a very obvious need, which I think we all agree was the need. I think like the idea that we need more ball handling, I don't think anyone was saying that beforehand. It's now this fitting in. Oh yeah, now Damon CJ can play off the ball, but I don't think anyone was saying that really before the year, as you know. And if that was a need, it was probably, you know, 10th on the list of things that this team needed to get better at. I mean, the biggest one I think is defense, and I think Turner is just, you know, probably an average defender of opposing wings.
So with wings on the mind, we have Alan Crabb also re-signing with the Blazers for 4 years, $75 million. And then you have Mo Harkless re-signing 4 years, $10 million. So it sounded like you were a bit lukewarm on the Alan Crabb signing. And I'm wondering if that is just more because of the overpay, or if it's just Alan Crabb, you know, similarly to Evan Turner, that he's not an exceptional player.
Crabb, I think, fits a little bit better because he can at least hit a shot. I think he's a defender who's improving, if not great. I mean, he's going to struggle to guard some of the larger wings as well. But against a lot of teams, you can get away with him as your three to close. They did that a lot, I think, to some success last year. And so I don't think he's a bad player. I do think that, again, and what is your prediction for Alan Crabb? Do you think, like, let's say 2 years from now, he's in his prime, like, what number shooting guard is he in the league? Is he like the 20th best shooting guard, the 10th best? Like, where would you think he would end up at that time?
Well, in 2 years, you have to assume that CJ will still be on the team, so he's not even going to be the best shooting guard on the Blazers. So he's number two in Portland, and I would have to imagine there's probably 15 at least other starting shooting guards who are better, and then maybe a few. Yeah, I would imagine number 20 is relatively realistic.
Yeah, and you'd have to imagine at that point that he will be paid far better than the 20th best shooting guard, even when you account for the fact that some of those would be still on rookie contracts and somewhat artificially limited. So I think, again, and I feel the same way about Turner, is those guys might help a little bit. I think that they may make them better. You're better off having them on the team than just not having them if you wouldn't be replacing them with anyone else. But this is a team that I felt had young talent and flexibility where it might be possible for them to get into the top part of the Western Conference. And by the number one way to do that was by really, really improving the defense. And I don't think that they address that need. I think the offense is going to be good. I think you just got to trust Dame and CJ, and also acknowledge that those are probably two minus defenders at those positions. And so my team building strategy, I think a fairly obvious one, is, all right, now we're going to load up on defense at the other positions, especially center, which is the most important defensive position. And if you couldn't get a guy who would really fit that bill for you this year, then it's better to, yeah, all right, maybe even take a little bit of a step back this year with the aim of maintaining flexibility, trying to win a championship. And maybe it's possible that that opportunity with that flexibility never comes along. That's possible, but you at least have that chance. I know now, I think, or suspect very strongly that chance now with these contracts, with this nucleus, is not going to come unless they can kind of perform some other gymnastics, which what I think are going to be contracts that are not easily tradable.
Well, that's what I was going to ask to introduce another narrative, and maybe this is just something that Blazers fans tell themselves to help them sleep at night a little bit better, that, you know, accepting that maybe Portland has a slightly difficult time attracting free agents. I think about, you know, restricted free agency with Paul Millsap, with Roy Hibbert. I think about Hedo Turkoglu a couple years ago, more restricted free agency with Enes Kanter.
Oh, yeah, you dodged a bullet on that one.
Seriously.
The Hedo Turkoglu.
No, the Turkoglu thing worked out really, really well. Props to Miss Turkoglu for wanting to be in Toronto, for sure. But another narrative is that the Blazers, maybe the contracts that they have now are not going to comprise the team moving forward, that perhaps the Blazers, in overpaying for some players, retaining a gaggle of free agents, they have positioned themselves, particularly in a league where the salary cap is rising, they position themselves to perhaps make some consolidation trades down the line if you're able to play your players enough to show their value and show other teams that they could have value in other systems. Perhaps the Blazers have positioned themselves to make consolidation trades, and that is really their end goal. What do you think of that line of thinking?
I think one of those guys, I would say Harkless, is probably on a good contract, although with Turner in the fold, he may not play as much. Then you have all these centers and power forward, so who knows how much he's actually going to play. But if you look at between Crabbe and Turner and Leonard and Harkless, Aminu will always be a good contract. That was a great contract. That's also part of why I was so disappointed, because I thought Olshay had done a great job up until this year, as an aside. But Azili, too, who might be injured. I mean, you look at all those players, Miles Plum or Mason Plumlee is still going to be on the team. Some of those guys aren't going to play. And you're not going to want to trade the ones who are playing, because you already think that those are the best guys. That's why they're playing. And so not only are a lot of those guys on dubious contracts to begin with, but now you throw in the fact that some of them may even like not get that much playing time, and now it becomes really hard to move them.
That's kind of exactly what I wanted to get into in regards with Mo Harkless, because, you know, he signed that reasonable contract, 4 years, $40 million, to come back to a team where Evan Turner is going to be getting minutes on the wing, Alan Crabbe, Al-Farouq Aminu is going to be shifting up to power forward, so there aren't going to be that many minutes, if any, for Mo Harkless to stretch up. So I'm wondering, how does Terry Stotts get a guy like Mo Harkless on the floor, or is he kind of the odd man out, do you think?
Yeah, to me, I guess you're kind of viewing Turner as more of like a 1-2 almost, maybe, and I think Harkless is a better fit for what this team needs than Turner because of his defensive versatility. We saw him guard 1 through 4 in the playoffs. That series with the Clippers, I thought, really changed when they decided to put Harkless on Chris Paul. He can guard 4s okay, which enables Aminu to guard 3s. Aminu, he's playing in the 4, and that's great, but you would like to have the versatility for him to actually be your wing stopper if the other team has a Kevin Durant type of player. And now you can have Harkless guard the other team's four. It's a rare team that has a great post-up four and a really good three that is a big threat on the wing. So I think he's actually an excellent fit with Aminu, and you would hope that he continue to improve his outside shooting. He's only 22, so I think that's realistic. And I really, especially on defense, I love his fit with Aminu. And again, as I said, I thought they really took off when they took Vonleh out of the starting lineup and they put in Harkless instead. So I really would have liked to have continued to roll forward with those two guys starting at forward and see what they could do, especially as both of them hopefully improve their shooting a little bit.
It's definitely a bummer to see that minutes crunch there for Harkless. And like last season, he wasn't getting utilized hardly at all for the first, while Noah Vonleh was in the starting lineup. And then, as you mentioned, they kind of took off with that lineup with Harkless and Aminu playing the forward position. So I really hope that Terry Stotts is able to work this out. And one other thing we're looking at here is with Aminu stretching up to power forward, I think Terry Stotts recently said that's going to be more or less a consistent position that he's going to be playing, and he's probably going to end up starting there. With the guys that the Blazers have in the front court, including Ed Davis, Mason Plumlee, Myers Leonard, and Festus Ezeli, if those guys are healthy, I mean, I don't know where all the minutes are for these guys who deserve minutes. So, Nate, if you're looking at it and you have Plumlee, Davis, presumably, let's assume a healthy enough Leonard and Ezeli to play, and then Aminu playing power forward, who's the odd man out there not getting minutes in the front court?
Yeah, that's a tough call, right? I think that Plumlee showed something with his ability to make plays a little bit on the pick and roll, but I also thought that in general his playoffs were very overrated on both ends. I thought he did a poor job of rebounding. I don't think he's a great rebounder for a center. He was completely unable, while he was able to make plays by passing off the dribble, when the other team actually made him shoot, he just could not finish at the rim at all in that Warriors series. He just would get stripped. He would get blocked. He was just, I mean, he probably shot like 35% around the rim in the Warriors series, something like that. And certainly on plays where he was actually having to take a dribble and get to the rim, he was very inefficient. So I think that aspect of his game is a little bit overrated, but I think you're still in the same problem where none of these guys really are good defensive centers. I would say Ezeli should get the most playing time, but he's probably not going to be healthy and may not be as effective if he is at least healthy enough to play, if not healthy enough to play at the level that we saw at the start of last year. So I don't know. I mean, I guess it'll probably be Plumlee, but the whole idea of having him then kind of obviates what you've got from Turner. Plumlee can't shoot at all. Turner can't shoot at all. Aminu is maybe an average shooter for his position. And so now your positional shooting is not really that great either. So I'm just not really that impressed with the center rotation, and you sort of have like all of these options, but none of them add up to like one good guy who can play both ends or even one end incredibly well.
Yeah, and Plumlee is also in the last year of his rookie contract, which is, it's going to be under like $3 million.
Yeah, and the trade market for centers is awful right now, by the way. We should add that too. Like, everybody's trying to get rid of a center, and because the league is playing smaller, there just isn't as much demand for those guys these days.
It's just crazy. And thinking about even next summer, I know this is pretty far in advance considering where we're at in August right now, but Mason Plumlee coming out of that rookie contract, yeah, he's incredibly affordable right now, but if the Blazers want to keep him, they're going to be looking at what's a market rate for a guy like him? 10, 12 million?
My market or the league's market?
Let's say hypothetical league market.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult for me to, I mean, they just paid Myers Leonard 4 for $41, and Myers Leonard was the backup and Plumlee started over him all year. So you think it's difficult for me to imagine that if he just to take a contract from the Blazers, he would accept anything less than 12 or 13 million a year. And if he starts all year again, he's going to think of himself as a starter. He's going to want that's what starting centers got paid, 15, 16 million, 17 million. So you'd think that's what it'd be. Now he could get onto the market and find that it's a little chillier than expected due to some of those market forces that we discussed. But as far as just the Blazers coming to an agreement with him, you know, I think he's going to be holding out for that level, and it could be either something that drags out or they're going to have to match an offer sheet, and he's not going to sign an offer sheet unless it's in that $15, $16 million range, probably. And you also remember his age, 227. This is one chance. He'll be 27 at that time. This was one chance to get paid, so he needs to cash out on this contract.
It's definitely going to be really interesting to see what happens with Mason Plumlee, but I think a guy that's more interesting is probably CJ McCollum, and he signed a four-year extension for $106 million, which ended up being not a true max contract where it takes up a percentage of the cap. So we do have to kind of give Neil O'Shea a bit of a tip of the cap on that one, right?
Yeah, I was critical of it initially just because I felt like CJ, he had a low cap hold, but that probably wasn't going to matter with all the other money that they spent. They're going to be over the cap regardless. Initially, it was just reported as the max, and then you're not, this way at least, with the CBA uncertainty, with the cap uncertainty, you're locking him in to what the projected max is supposed to be on $102 million cap. Could end up that that's about what it is, and you don't really gain anything, but at least you're limiting a huge downside if you're the Blazers. So that looks better now. If it had just been a pure max, if they hadn't extracted any concession from him at all, I probably wouldn't have liked it, just because I think CJ shot extremely well on long twos. And I think if anyone could be the sort of guy who could sustain that, it would be him. But, you know, we could see him take a little bit of a step back this year because his ability on offense is so dependent on making tough jump shots. And that can vary a little bit from year to year. But I think, you know, that's just sort of good, understandable, not amazing, but at least they got something out of him instead of just going for the max right away.
Okay, so speaking of year-to-year variance, I got one last question here on the off-season grades here. I want to talk, about the team roster, basically, that the Blazers brought back and the potential to improve, because it seems like, and this is, I think, something that Zach Lowe sort of mentioned, that maybe these guys, a bunch of them, overperformed last year, and there may be, this is kind of a gamble, that there may be a regression from one or a few of the players. And it sounded like when you and Danny were assessing the team, that it didn't seem unrealistic to you that one or a few of the players could potentially regress. And I think a lot of Blazer fans are looking at this and thinking that they weren't playing over their heads last year, but they had actually improved, so they set a new baseline, and there's potential to improve this year, but maybe the potential regression isn't being as noted. So I want to get your take on that.
Yeah, well, when you look at the ages of the guys, that most of those guys are young. NBA players' primes usually are 25 to 27, maybe a little bit later if you're like a super high-end superstar, which I probably wouldn't put CJ in that category. So the fact that those guys are still on the right side of the aging curve, that would augur that they're going to get better. Now, a lot of the guys, the improvements that they made were based on big shooting improvements, whether it was Aminu. You know, he'd never really been a starting three before. He'd kind of played more as a four. I mean, he was almost a small ball five in Dallas the year before. You might say, all right, he's getting older. He did this last year. Now he's going to improve. But, you know, it really takes probably about 750 attempts of three-pointers to really know that a guy is at a certain baseline. So I think he could regress. He could also get better. I think we don't really know, because the aging curve would say these guys are going to get better. And whereas, you know, the fact that they really outperformed by a lot anything that they had previously done, especially in a variable category like shooting, could mean that they get worse. So my kind of operating assumption for someone like Aminu is that he's probably going to be about the same as last year. Based on that, I think you can expect someone like Harkless to get better. Crab, I'm not really sure. I mean, what do you think about Crab? Like, what are the areas of his game that he just can actually improve?
So we want to see him be able to put the ball on the floor and create for himself a little bit, because he's a great guy at coming off of screens and having others more or less create for him. But in terms of being able to create his own offense and take pressure off of Dame and CJ in that way, he's not exactly a guy that can put the ball on the floor and get to the rim quite yet. So at his age, looking at his skill set, that's something that I think we hope that he can develop. And I think we're pretty optimistic about that. Otherwise, it's basically he's going to be more or less an ancillary player in the offense coming off screens, we think.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, he can probably get a little bit stronger, get a little bit better defensively, become a better team defender. I think that's probably the biggest thing that young players are able to improve on is just their defensive execution, if not even necessarily their one-on-one defense. And so someone like Harkless certainly could take a big step forward there. But yeah, I don't see Crabb as a guy with a ton of upside beyond where he is, really, unless he really just becomes an incredibly high volume 40% three-point shooter. But he also, I don't think until last year, had really shot exceedingly well. I'm just saying that off the top of my head. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. But so he's a guy who, again, you know, is he going to take another step forward and shoot 40% on a really high volume? Or is he going to go, I mean, what was he, like 37, 38% on threes last year or something like that?
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah, so or does he drop back to 35%? You know, I think each of those things are equally likely at this point.
That's fair. I want to ask one last question here, and I want to sort of put you on the spot because it's kind of that season where we're all looking toward 2016-2017, dog days of summer, and we're going to start seeing team previews and predictions for next season. So if I set the over-under for the Blazers win total at 45, and again, I apologize to put you on the spot here, would you take the over on 45 wins or the under?
Well, that's a good question. Let's think about that, and I'd like to hear what you guys think too, since you're closer to the team. But I mean, they won 44 last year, and I think they're right about where their point differential on that would have suggested. So you look at what's going to get better. Is the defense going to get better this year? Yeah, maybe. I think it probably will. I think Turner is another guy who at least is an average defender on the wing. If you're playing Aminu more at the four, I think that makes you better on defense than when they went with more traditional fours. The guys are just going to get older. They compete a little bit harder. Someone like Dame and CJ are can get a little bit better at least. So I think they could be a little bit better on defense. Offensively, I think Turner is going to hurt a little bit. But they're also, I think, going to play with a little bit more spacing. I think like Vonleh being out of the rotation, you know, not playing him 13 minutes a game. He was their worst player by net rating, which is pretty amazing when you consider that he played most of his minutes with the starters last year. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll help if he's not going to be in the rotation at all. So, I think they could get a little bit better on offense, but you also worry about the shooting regression from the stars, whether this, Turner has never been an efficient offensive player, and he's a guy who likes to shoot a lot. And so if you throw in him, at an average usage rate and a 50% true shooting, that's going to kind of drag things down a little bit also. So I would say maybe they're a little bit better on defense this year and probably about the same on offense and, maybe a little bit better, a little bit worse. So I would say. And then they also have a lot of depth, too. So if they, unless Dame and CJ get injured, I think everyone else, they really can withstand an injury, too, quite well. And that helps a lot, too. I like teams in a season-long over-under that are going to be able to fill their injuries, and there's not that much injury risk. So I would say I would predict them at maybe like 46 wins this year, so maybe slightly over that. But again, to me, my dislike of their offseason wasn't even necessarily about this year so much as it was just the long term of these next two or three years and really trying to get into the upper tier. But I think for this year, they could be a little bit better.
I don't think they're the team that started the season 11 and 20 or whatever, but I also don't think they're the team that went, whatever it was between February and March, like 18 and 7. At that blistering, 54 win rate or whatever. So
yeah, although that did coincide, didn't it, with putting Aminu at the four and starting Harkless? Wasn't that at the same time as that? So there is like kind of a reason you could latch onto for why they were so successful there. And I thought they played well in that configuration in the playoffs too. So maybe there's something you could point to there as like, well, this is sustainable, even though it's was only a short part of the season.
It certainly plays to why they would improve, and you mentioned this in your response that Noah Vonleh not being in the starting lineup for 60 some odd games is going to help the team a lot because they're going to be playing a much tighter rotation with a lot more depth. And so I think going with that, the front court that they have with Aminu playing up for 82 games, if everybody's healthy, I don't think they're super far off that 54 win pace, but I would probably ballpark it at something like 49, 50 wins or so for me.
Yeah, you could also look at the fact that they were exceedingly healthy last year, though. I mean, like, the only rotation guy who didn't play at least 70 games was Leonard. He was still at 61. So I thought that that was something that maybe we are underrating how healthy they were last year. And CJ playing 80, Dame 75, like, although he doesn't really ever get hurt either. So, I mean, but CJ is someone who's been injured before in the past. So maybe we should expect a little bit of health regression, but they've also got more reinforcements there. So hopefully it won't be too much of an issue for them.
Brandon, what are you thinking about win totals here as we wrap up?
Yeah, I'll make this pretty quick. Terry Stotts has had this oddly effective way of helping his players and his team overachieve. I'm not saying that that's going to happen every year until he is either fired or he moves on. But I personally do think that there's something to cohesion, to alignment from top to bottom. I think that teams, as they play together more and more, I think they become more effective, particularly on defense, as we were talking about earlier. Allen Crabbe's team defensive abilities might grow a little bit just by nature of the fact that he's finally getting minutes. I mean, you look at CJ McCollum, he's started, you know, under 100 games in his career. You know, this iteration of the Blazers that we see was brand new last year. So for me, I think it's not even just about whether the Blazers are going to be better as a team, more cohesive, more aligned, and whether or not Terry Stotts can help them overachieve a little bit. But you have to look at the rest of the conference, which, again, that kind of, you have the Golden State Warriors on a level above everyone else. Then you have like a second tier of the Spurs, the Clippers. And then below that, you have this kind of this mushy middle. Oklahoma City's still going to be a good team. Memphis with Chandler Parsons, you know, health depending, they could be pretty good. So, I mean, I don't know. It's tough for me to put a number on it. I wouldn't be super surprised at 50 wins, but I also wouldn't be surprised at 45 or, frankly, 55. And, Nate, as you said, they're relatively deep. So even if they do suffer a couple injuries, they could probably withstand those better than some of the other teams. So I'm gonna say 49.
All right, Nate, one last time before we get out of here. Can you give the Blazers Edge listeners, let them know where to find your work online?
Absolutely. Nate Duncan NBA is the Twitter handle. In my bio for that, there is a link to the Dunked On Basketball podcast. And we are doing 2 days a week here, probably for the next couple of weeks, and then going to preview all 30 teams. And then during the season, we try to hit on every team at least once a week, or at least once every 2 weeks with our 15 and 60, where we talk about 15 teams in 60-ish minutes and do a lot of game wrap-ups and mailbags. And just basically, it's a 5 days a week podcast during the season and up until free agency.
All right. Thanks, Nate, for coming on, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. It was fun.
Okie doke. Episode 166 of the Blazers Edge podcast is all done. We'd like to thank you very much for joining us this week. And a huge thanks to Nate Duncan for coming on the show.
Yeah, you should for sure check out his Dunked On podcast with himself and Danny LaRue. Just want to say real quick, if you're not super familiar with the more technical financial side of the NBA, their podcast makes that stuff really accessible and fun to listen to. I know for me, it's been one of the better podcasts to check out, and you should definitely check it out too. You can find the information in the news post here. Our intro and outro beats, as usual, are brought to you by Odar. You can check out more of his work at soundcloud.com/odarbeats. Be sure to tune in to the Blazers Edge Midweek Podcast with Dan Maring and managing editor Dave Deckard. And for Chris Lucia, I'm Brandon Goldner. And remember, if you're going to go hiking in the summer, do not slide all the way down the mountain. It will not be a very smooth ride at all. We'll be right back.